This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today, and it is episode 59. I forgot to mention that last week. One more episode, we'll be at 60. Woohoo! Anyways, it's been a good week this week. I am going to come in for just a couple of hours tomorrow. We're trying to finish a few things up quickly. We have pretty much landed this big project that I've been working on, but there's always a little dust in the corners, and there was one more application that we hadn't got done as part of the projects, and now they're saying, you know, it'd probably be good if we go get that application done. We could have lived without it, but it would be better to have it, and so we're making a run at it trying to get that done. So I'm going to come in tomorrow for a little bit and try to get a little farther on that. I made some good progress over the last 2 weeks, and so I'm going to do a little bit tomorrow. In news, let's see, Knit Central, we launched April 30th, and so we're about 2 weeks into it now, and that's going well. We launched with 30 knit clips, where we just take a little piece of a television show or a piece of a movie, about 30 seconds long, and I do a little commentary on it about why that has a knit in it. Some things like a sign in a hospital that reads magnetic resonance imagining instead of imaging. Those are all available out at knitcentral.com, short for knitpicking, knitcentral.com. Although you can just go to philfarron.com and there is a link from philfarron.com right over to Knit Central, because that's what I have on my front page at this point. Anyways, as I say on my front page, this is not the super secret project. I am still working on the super secret project. I am learning all about Autodesk Inventor, getting ready to actually plunk down my thousands of dollars to buy this software. It really is an amazing piece of software, beautiful piece of software. Anyway, so that's all going real well. The consulting stuff just is puttering along. It seems to be doing real well. We haven't had any big deal breakers yet. Everything seems to be working. It's always nice when that happens. Had a really wonderful weekend. My daughter is within just weeks now of giving birth to our first grandbaby and her first daughter. And her hubby is with her. I didn't want to make it sound like it's just her. Her and her hubby, they're getting ready to have their first child. And Michael Feldman of What Do You Know was going to have a live show here in the Juanita K. Hammond Center in Springfield, Missouri. And so I thought it would be fun for all of us to go. So I picked up tickets for us, and I told them, I said, you know what? Your lives are getting ready to change drastically. And this is probably going to be the last chance that we have to just spend some quality time together, the four of us, in about 18 years, for the next 18 or 20 years. So why don't we just go make a day of it? So we did that. We went to the What Do You Know show, and my daughter actually got one of her questions asked on the air. We all wrote down questions, and her question was, can the very pregnant lady stand up and stretch during the show? And he called her out, and he said, yes, absolutely. So that was cute. And then from there, we headed down to Branson, and we went to the IMAX and went to a show on Hubble. And I may talk about that in a little bit, depending on how much time we have left. But it really just was a really, really nice day. I call them my kids. Obviously, they're adults. They usually come over on Friday nights, and we get together on Monday nights to have supper together. And, of course, we get together on Monday nights for the rest of the evening to do Knit Central and that kind of thing. And so we do spend some time together, but it was really lovely to just be able to spend some quality, do-nothing, kicking-around time together. So that was very cool. Anyways, in the course of this last week, I talked about a NOVA program last week, but they followed it with another NOVA program that was really good. I really, really enjoyed it. And it was on Mount St. Helens, back from the dead. It was cute because when I first started talking about it, I have amused myself this week, I should say, by bringing up what they brought up when they first started talking about it, because I start talking to people, my buddies, and say, so, you remember Mount St. Helens when it went off? And one of my buddies said, yeah. I said, yeah, you know when it went off? And he kind of frowned, in 1980? Right, buddy, that was 30 years ago. That was 30 years ago. And he says, ah, don't remind me. He said, I was 10 at the time, I'll have you know. I said, well, I was 21, so I definitely remember. And they started quoting statistics on the Mount St. Helens eruption. And I knew it was big. I mean, I knew it was big. I didn't realize as big that it was as big as it was. You know, they were saying that there was a 5.1 earthquake that started it off, and within 10 seconds, the whole northern flank had collapsed. It was the largest landslide in recorded history. They were estimating that millions, with an M, millions of tons of magma went up in a colossal explosion. There's these huge clouds of searing gas and rock, pyroclastic flows, they're called, all over the countryside. I mean, the forest was just flattened. Spirit Lake, they said something like I don't know. I can't read and drive at the same time, but there was dozens and dozens of feet. Spirit Lake was rosened up. Okay, talk, Phil. Rose up because of all the debris in it. I mean, it was just amazing. It shot poisonous steam and gas miles into the air. It virtually just wiped out all life in that area that was downwind of this thing. There were actually 57 people that died, I think, and they said something like that some of those were 13 miles away. They thought they were in areas that were safe, and when this thing went off with such an impact that it even got into some of the people that thought they were far enough away. Something like 200 square miles of ash and rock just incinerates everything. Thousands of birds disappear. Billions of insects are gone. The deer and elk are wiped out. There's actually like two zones that they were talking about. There was the blowdown zone that was like 8 miles from the crater, approximate. And everything there is covered by ash. And then they had what was called the pumice plain, and that was right next to the mountain. And there, it's just completely obliterated. Everything's obliterated in the pumice zone. They said it looks like the surface of the moon. There's just nothing left. And one of the things that was really, really interesting in this program was the geologists or the biologists that were studying the progression of life after this. And I remember when they were talking about this after Mount St. Helens had gone off and they were looking at the devastation. And the scientists were saying it is going to be decades before this area is going to resume any sort of a normal appearance. It's just going to be decades before life is going to be back. And it was really fascinating to hear the recollections of one of the biologists who was watching this all unfold. They would go in for low flyovers with their helicopters and then set them down if they saw something interesting. And I think it was within three months of the explosion, they were doing a flyover and they saw these little patches of brown dirt where the soil had been churned up. And they thought, what? And so they went down, they landed, started looking around. Lo and behold, if there aren't these little pocket gophers, And these little pocket gophers were hunkered down inside their little burrows when Mount St. Helens went off. And they were protected by this big layer of dirt. And apparently just stayed hunkered down in there till they thought everything was okay. And then they started pushing the dirt out. Making tunnels, digging and digging and digging and pushing the dirt out. And they're making all these little entrances, and there's fresh brown dirt that they've stirred up from underneath. And they're in the process of mixing this dirt together with the ash and, you know, all the rocks and all that kind of stuff. They're started. They're doing their thing out there. And then I think it was the spring of the following year. Mount St. Helens had gone off in May of 1980, I believe. And so in 81, the spring of the following year, the scientist is back out. Excuse me. He's back out doing the helicopter flyovers. And he notices this little splash of color right in the middle of the pumice zone, pumice plain. I mean, this is where everything got hit the hardest. Notices this little splash of color, and he sets down and he finds this little plant. And I'm actually coming up to a stop sign, so I'm going to try to find the name of this plant. It was a prairie lupin, and it normally grows up higher on the mountain. This particular plant is a pretty special plant because, if I recall correctly, it has a symbiotic relationship with bacteria in its roots. And so it can go in very nutrient, it can grow in very nutrient poor soil. Because the bacteria in its roots, I think, breaks down the soil and releases nitrogen, and then the plant uses that to grow. And then through photosynthesis, it produces sugars, which it then delivers down through its roots, which feeds the bacteria. And so this thing can grow in a lot of places. It is a pioneering species, just like the gophers. They move in first. And when they landed the helicopter, they found this little prairie lupin. And not only was it growing on the pumice plain, which is nothing but rock and pumice and ash, it's in full flower. It's out there, ta-da, here I am. And that's really the beginning of it. They were talking about Spirit Lake and how that they were wondering how long it was going to take. Decades it was going to take for Spirit Lake to come back to look like anything like the other lakes that are out there. Because it's just choked full of debris. And they said, after the blast, if you'd put your hand down into the lake up to your wrist, you couldn't even see your fingers move. That's how murky the water was. And the water was bubbling up, and it was just filled with sediment. And yet, a couple of years go by, the sediment starts drifting to the bottom and settling out. These little mini plants, plankton they call them, these little plants, they drop in on the wind or on the feet of birds and stuff, and they start growing. They, as the water begins to clear and sunlight starts getting down in there, these little microscopic plant life, it just starts taking off. And when there's a food source, other things start coming. And these little microscopic plants take that sunlight, start turning it into oxygen, and all of a sudden this lake that had been completely depleted of oxygen by the bacteria that were growing there now starts to have a resurgence. And just one piece after another, and these scientists had documented how all these things were complementary and working together. They talked about how that the gophers were digging all of these tunnels, mixing this dirt with the ash, and how that when the elk then wandered through that area, they would punch down holes in these tunnels so that the little salamanders and the cold-blooded lizards and snakes and those types of things, when they couldn't get any relief from any shade because it was just all pumice plain, they could slither down into these holes and they could survive and they could take hold in this area. And it was really fascinating to watch life come surging back. And this scientist, well, this scientist that they had talked to all along, was talking towards the end of this program, and he said that we found a lot of our conventional wisdom was just flat wrong. He said nobody could have predicted the speed at which life returned. And several months ago, I started with a little saying where I would ask my friends, I would say, what is the quality of life? And they'd give me a bunch of things, and or they'd kind of look at me odd, and I'd say the quality of life is growth. Everything that's alive grows. So if you don't feel yourself, if you don't understand that you, if you can't point to anything that shows that you are growing, maybe you need to reassess what's going on in your life, because everything that's truly alive grows. And after watching this special, I think I have to add something to it, and that a quality of life is that life is resilient, that life perseveres. It's really amazing to watch this coming back from Mount St. Helens. I mean, Mount St. Helens had just... I'm rolling down my window because my best all-time buddy who lives 300 feet from me is coming home and I'm just waving to him. Anyways, it was really fascinating to watch and see how life had taken this hit. I mean, hammered down, wiped out. And yet, after life takes this hit, you know, it hunkers down for a little while. It licks its wounds a little bit. And then it just starts coming back. Because it's resilient. And it's persistent. And I had a couple of opportunities this week to kind of put this into practice. If I'm alive, I not only grow, I'm getting my mail. If I am alive, I not only grow, but I am resilient and I am persistent. And I had a couple of opportunities to put that in. I am really not much of a computer hardware guy. I have an internet supply business, but I really relied on my buddy who I just waved to, because he's a hardware guy. He's a network guy. I really relied on him to help me get that set up. And he did. He gave me a tremendous amount of help in that and helped me every step of the way to get it set up. And when I'm really facing something difficult, I call him up. Well, I had a little computer hardware problem. And I won't go into much time because I'm opening the garage door and I'm about to be done. And I called him and chatted with him about it. I'm backing into my garage. But whereas on a bunch of points this week, I would have normally just hired his son to come down and fix it for me, I kept saying, no, I'm not quitting. Life is persistent. Life is resilient. I'm not quitting. And it took me longer than it would have taken them. And I probably had to order a few more pieces. But I got her done. I got it done. And it's working. I had another situation come up this week, and I'm not going to go into all the ins and outs of that, but it was just one of those joyful situations that you get into as your parents get a little older, and sometimes they decide they're going to go off and do some things without necessarily doing all their homework and researching it all the way through, but that's okay. And I actually ended up as an instrument repairman on an electronic instrument. which is something I do not do. But after watching this NOVA program, I just said, you know what? Life is persistent. If you're alive, you should be resilient. If you're alive, you should be persistent. So while I very much had no idea what I was doing, I nonetheless, last night, went over as a way to honor my father, and we worked on it. And somehow we made it work. I had my little leads on my tester, and I saw a couple of pins on the side of a chip, and I had a little thought, I'm starting there. And those were the two pins that I needed to do something with. Now, maybe some other pins would have worked as well. I don't know. All I know is when I put those leads to that tester, it did exactly what it was supposed to do. Life is persistent. Life is resilient. And if life is those things, we should be those things too. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.